Heads up, friends. The unofficial Shopify podcast is made by indie entrepreneurs for indie entrepreneurs and may contain material not suitable for all audiences, like swearing or economics. Listener discretion is advised. So if you're listening to this show, you are very likely an English speaker. And if you're listening to this show and an English speaker, I know it is probable and likely that you are in North America, probably the US, maybe Canada. But if not one of those two, maybe the UK or Australia. And actually, we have a lot of Australian listeners. Hello, my friends. But outside of those countries, e-commerce is prevalent and thriving and very different and very difficult compared to us. We're playing on easy mode, right? It is different in North America to be involved with e-commerce. So if you are outside of the EU and you want to expand into those countries, you want to sell internationally and really open up your market, there's a lot of nuance and things we need to go over and figure out. Or maybe, you know, the other way around, you are in Europe and you want to internationalize, where there it becomes quite a necessity when you want to reach a larger market to sell your stuff. And my work has been almost entirely American. You know, virtually all of our clients are going to be in the United States. So I'm not fit to talk about this. I need someone, I need a guest. And so joining me is a colleague, a fellow Shopify Plus expert, agency owner, David Simoes. David, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me, mate. How are you doing?
Very well. My pleasure to have you here. Where are you located? Because I doubt it's America.
Right now, I'm in Czech Republic, Central Europe.
Czech Republic. Wow. That's not where you're originally from, is it?
No, it's not. I'm originally from Portugal, and I've been here for right now like 8 years, but I also lived like 1 year in Spain, Madrid. I've been around South America as well, so I've been around quite a lot in many different places.
I believe it. That makes you uniquely qualified to talk about internationalization here. But what about your e-commerce background? What do you do there?
I actually started diving more into e-commerce since I've come to Czech Republic, because in other countries, the e-commerce market wasn't as well developed 8-10 years ago. One curious stat or fun fact for you is that Czech Republic, still in Europe, is the country with the biggest amount of online stores per capita, which is quite incredible. So when I arrived here, I was surprised that every single small business that you see on the streets, they have like on top of them, instead of just having a logo, like a cool fancy logo, they have their website, you know, like whatever business.cz or .com or whatever, you know. So this is already 10 years ago. So the country is quite digitally forward. And since I've come here, I started going deeper into those, these markets, this business. But for Shopify, it was not super mature enough. So actually, in the first 3-4 years of me doing Shopify work, I was working mostly with brands from London, from UK.
In Czech Republic, they seem to be early adopters, a lot of e-commerce penetration. And even so, you still ended up working with English-speaking native brands in the UK.
Yeah, it's not just about the fact that you are digitally forward. Because of that, and because of the specificities of the culture of the country, Shopify was like not prepared at all for to serve this specific location, you know? At the same time, my Czech wasn't so good as it is today. Right now I speak Czech, but before I didn't. So it was just much easier for me to get in touch with UK, London clients and sell there and serve them there. And slowly what I've did is I started educating our local market to the advantages of Shopify through some case studies, blog posts, etc. In the beginning, we were getting the smallest entrepreneurs that want to be different. And now, like, we have clients that are doing like hundreds of millions with 150 physical locations between two countries and so on.
I like that. They So, I mean, from where you're sitting, do you look at American merchants and think we're playing on easy mode?
Like, I don't want to offend anybody, but kind of,
oh,
yes.
Please,
you know,
do.
Because, yeah, let's make some clickbaity entrance here. Sure, like, if you think about the States, you have like 350 million in population. Europe is around 450 million. And you have one currency, one language. There may be some like tax differences and legislations per state, but Shopify natively covers most of them. And if not, you have like a bunch of partners that do it for you, like Avalara and so on. In Europe, within these 450 million potential buyers, you have like 27 languages, I think, 10 currencies, and each country has its own language, basically. Not to speak even about culture and habits or traditions that make everything much more complex. So imagine that if you want to reach 15 million or 40 million like market, you actually have to have an independent strategy for each one of these. You don't have any of this to worry about when you are in the States. When you are in the States, you basically start a store, English, dollars, accelerated checkout, let's go. You know, connect it to Amazon, let's go. Anybody from these 350 million people can buy, you know? And in Europe, it's quite more complicated.
Our issues then, we have language barriers, quite a few.
Yeah.
In North America, it's like, all right, if I cover three languages, English, French, Spanish, all right, that's everybody. Like, you really have covered a majority of the market there. You have more to deal with in terms of languages. You have more currencies to deal with. You've got,
sure.
You know, for me, it's three. That's it, and I'm done. Yep. And these, like you're tailoring to these individual locales, but that have much smaller total market total people in them, just smaller populations. And then on top of it, we're going to layer, just to make things like extra special, different regulations for all of those geographies. I'm sure we'll get into some of that. And Shopify features, they tend to roll out, almost all of them roll out North America first, often US first, which for a Canadian company, I'm sure it could be frustrating for our Canadian friends. So there's stuff that like I have access to within Shopify that you probably don't yet. You know, it rolls out, it expands. But all right, well, of the like language, currencies, features, market regulation, what's the toughest problem to solve?
The toughest problem to solve is probably something that neither you or me solve on a daily basis, but it's actually the operational side, is logistics. That's something that, like, we don't like. It's not so sexy or fancy to speak about. It's not just about a quick gain that you make. You change color, the color of some button, and you have 100% increase in conversion rate. It's actually the hard work, you know, of setting up the processes, setting up where we're going to have warehouses or what 3PL are going to use or not, how you're going to handle customs and all these things. But this is like something that is not so much digital oriented. It's more like processes and business oriented, and it's solvable. But this is like something that it's quite challenging in the beginning when you go to a completely different continent, you know? So this is like the first thing that you need to figure out if you have the capacity and the budget to handle it. Eventually, if you want to have a local team to support you with that, or if you want to find a local agency or partner that can support you with that. That's something that even within Europe, sometimes we do. But going from the States to Europe, you really need to consider it as like one of the biggest pain points.
You know, the thing that fascinates me, I think it's subtle cultural differences. How much thought goes into that? How much work? Like, what is the level of effort required here if you're trying to successfully connect with people from different cultures? Even if realistically, like in many places, you could just get the car and drive to that country, but different language, different country, different culture, different history. How much effort are we putting into that? Help me wrap my head around it.
If I'm going to give you like some examples of these differences, for example, in Germany, the privacy laws are even tighter than we have, for example, in Romania. So you have to be much more careful about it. In the UK, it's not so uncommon to buy pills online, you know, from the drugstore, from pharmacy or whatever. In Netherlands, it's completely frowned upon. In some countries, if you have some product like contact lenses or some something that could be applied on a medical sense, you may actually have or have the possibility to have some health ID to get some cash back from the government. So these are some quirks from different countries. But what I've seen this year, which is quite interesting, is that there are merchants that solve this in two opposite ways. And it's really dependent on what type of product you are selling. I assume that the majority of your audience will be more D2C oriented. So what this merchant does, which is like very, I would say, time consuming and painful at points, is that they actually have one store per each single market. They try to change the copy, the promotions, sometimes the pricing, of course. They try to have completely different marketing strategies for each single one of these countries to make sure they can get the most out of it, you know? And this makes sense if you have, I don't know, up to 100 products in your store. So you really need to focus on the advantages of your products, on the, your USPs, etc. On the other hand, we've seen merchants that like are selling kitchenware, which is nothing super special. There is no custom like patent on it that makes it like unique. And it's about like volume of the product offering they have, and it's about scale. And these clients, what they try to do is automate as much as possible their expansion through automatic translations, ChatGPT, then having some like manual people, manual translators, of course, checking the highest value pages and products. But they try to basically expand as fast as they can. For example, launching one store per quarter, so they can have maximum presence. And what they do is they try to be as generic as they can, so that there will be no conflicts whatsoever with the cultures. So if, for example, if you imagine they are based in Czech Republic once again, they have a huge PR campaign very successfully, they will never put this on their main website, because if they do, they wouldn't be able to translate it correctly to other countries in order to have the same impact. So they try to have a very generalistic approach, which makes sense because their product is not specifically special. It's about basic, like mid-cost kitchenware that if I don't buy from you, I buy from B, C, D, and so on.
So we've got our issue. I mean, number one, we have regulatory issues. So yeah, knowing, you know, what's okay to sell in certain countries versus others. Though most of the examples you gave were more around like sensitive or restricted goods, you know, like how some places treat prescription lenses or, you know, well, actually several like examples were prescriptions. So certainly there. And then with content localization, we have to make sure that the offers make sense for everybody. But it sounds like some people try to get too granular. They try and make offers that are too specific mm-hmm. to each place and make themselves crazy. They're trying to change too much. I'm wondering about unique cultural aspects in the sense, you know, that like it's something that's perfectly acceptable, like on sale, shop now, might be offensive in some country and we don't know it.
That's a very layered question, you know, because if you want to talk about culture specifically, there's the aspect of language, but that is, it's more than just like direct translation. If you speak about, for example, in English, you have the word you. You can mean you personally, it could be your family, a group of people, and so on. In Europe, different languages have a different you for plural, for singular. And depending on the context that you use, it can be respecting. It can be actually offensive to use one or the other. And you actually need to know what is your audience and what is the best way to communicate your values to that audience in a way that we don't feel weird, you know? So in some cases, you want to be extra respectful if you are, I don't know, some classy luxury product. And in that case, even the you word and the grammar of the sentence will change dramatically. And therefore, the value proposition, the way that you communicate your brand is going to be different. That's like the culture aspect that is like very strong, even within the language. If you think about the habits of like, how should I buy something online? It's true, like some countries are very card oriented. And they use Shopify payments or different payment gateway for all of it. Some countries that if don't support Shopify payments need basically to shop around and see what gateways could they get or not for what conditions. And it's like more painful. It's like one more thing on your checklist to do before you launch your store. And what you have then on Central and Eastern Europe is a bunch of manual payments. You have bank transfers, which means that people receive the information about your bank account, they send the money, and then you have the job to basically somehow get the statements from your bank and pair it with your invoicing system. And Xero or QuickBooks don't do that for you, you know? So you need to have some custom integration or some automation put in place, so it's extra work. If you are also in Central and Eastern Europe, you have cash on delivery, which is very, very common, unfortunately, which put a strain on your cash flow. And it's one more challenge that like European merchants have to deal with. But if you go from your company in the States to Europe, and you don't have cash on delivery, bank transfers, etc., you probably could lose like 30 to 50% in conversions, which is like a lot.
If your store gets traffic, but doesn't see the sales you want, it can feel like throwing money out a window. And that's a huge problem. I get it. It's frustrating. But there's good news. IntelliGems, our latest sponsor, is the solution. This isn't just another Shopify app. It's a powerful A/B testing tool that transforms guesswork into data for decision making. If you feel like you're in the dark on what works, IntelliGems could be the game changer you're looking for. With IntelliGems, you unlock insights into what visitors to your site really want, what resonates with them. Test your themes, pricing, and shipping rates, and then get real-time data that guides your strategy, letting you build the best possible experience for every visitor. Plus, IntelliGems is easy to set up, and it integrates seamlessly with your Shopify store. So don't let another day of potential profit slip away. Make the move to smarter selling. Visit IntelliGems.io/Kurt and use the code Kurt, K-U-R-T, for 10% off your first month. Stop guessing, start optimizing with IntelliGems. Yeah, cash on delivery is essentially unheard of here. Like, you would use it for a small handful of B2B purchases where it's like, okay, it exists, but even then it would be unusual.
Yeah, and like, not even that, then there is like another type of payment methods. And of course, I'm forgetting about all the crypto and all these things that like someplace can be popular depending on your niche. But there is still, in some countries only, a specific direct bank transfer, which means that I go to the checkout, I click on a button with the logo of my bank, and it connects directly with my bank account and make a direct deposit to the merchant's bank account, you know? So it's kind of a very specific thing that is used in specific countries, Czech Republic, Italy, I believe. And what was the other country? Spain, they do that as well. In Portugal, they actually have an interesting one. In Portugal, they have a payment method which basically gives you a reference that allows you to pay your online order through the ATM, for example.
Oh, I think they do that in Mexico as well.
Yeah.
You know, you like go to a local, like, my local convenience store, and like, all right, here's my reference, and yeah, I pay there in person. Well, all right, with these language translations, what tools are you using? Like, I used Shopify's Translate and Adapt recently, and I switched from translated from English to French. And according to someone who said they could speak French, it was good.
Translate and Adapt is like the go-to solution for us as well, most of the times. There are some limitations sometimes, but in most of the scenarios, works pretty well. And I love that Shopify puts a real effort into that app, and you can see it. And it really works very well in auto-translating. And then, you can always correct or improve it and so on. I have a client that using Translate and Adapt together with some internal processes and some extra translators that they hire professionally, that are able to translate the whole store from one country to another within like one day of work.
Whoa. What kind of devil magic is that? How are they doing that?
Yeah, ChatGPT plays a big role in there as well. You know, they have some auto-translations, then they have some script to run it through the ChatGPT to get the translations improved by ChatGPT-4, which is better than the automatic thing that we see from most apps. And then they have professional translators just reviewing the copy.
And then, so like they do the basic GPT translation, and then they punch it up with GPT-4. Because GPT-4 is slow and expensive if you're doing a ton of content. So we start with GPT-3.5, punch it up with 4, and then finally a copy editor or translator like actually goes through it, make sure it makes sense?
More or less, not 3.5. They first just do the automatic translate and adapt, for example, or using whatever app that they have on Shopify store. And then they can either use it if it's good enough, but most of the time they just grab what they have there, the two texts, and they I don't know if they have a script right now or if they are doing manually of actually just like putting the text into the script, into the editor with some like not super expensive like manpower. And then they just have somebody going through the text. But of course, it's not a huge store. They have maybe, 50 products. So it's something else that if you are selling like thousands of those.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you have the small catalog versus the huge catalog, your life gets much easier.
It's a huge difference.
With the smaller catalog. Yeah. So talk to me about shipping methods, right? What are typical shipping methods, trends, or preferences that you're seeing?
In the northwestern part of Europe, it's pretty much similar to what you have in the States. We want as fast as possible. We are like spoiled by Amazon for sure. When you start to go, and there is not much variety in that, you know, except some countries like Netherlands and France a bit as well. This means that like there is basically standard delivery. Maybe if you want express delivery, you can have. You may be using some specific provider for insuring your package, typical things that we are all used to. Once you start going to the South, Central, and Eastern Europe, then you see some specificities. You see that some countries, because they are very much more evolved, like Czech Republic, as we were discussing before, it's very much advanced in this sense. They are expecting actually next day delivery, or you know, or 2 days delivery max. And if it's more than that, you may get a bad review. In Italy, for example, people are totally fine waiting 3-4 days for their order, you know? So actually, this is something you can leverage in your own like behalf, because you can say, okay, I can adapt my logistics to serve first the clients or the countries that are like more demanding of some like delivery time, then others that are more comfortable. And maybe we can even like over-deliver in those countries without too much effort. And regarding the very specific shipping methods you see then on Central and Eastern Europe is, for example, the pickup points. There are many specific services that allow you to basically go to the checkout, opens a map with your area, and you can see tens or maybe even hundreds of potential places where you can pick up your order. And this could be like, I don't know, a small local shop that has a partnership with this company, or it can even be automated boxes that you go there, you put some pin, it opens automatically, and you have your order there. And this is something that is very comfortable, getting more and more popular in Europe in general. And people are preferring it much more over like having to wait for the courier to arrive home and like connect with him, because we don't have the habit, which in the US is very typical and very common, of just letting the package at the door, you know? Here, I don't think it would like work very well. Also, I think we are living much more concentrated cities. Of course, I cannot compare with New York or whatever, but like the general America that you see in the movies, suburban America and so on, everybody just leaving the packages at the doors. Here it wouldn't work, you know? Here nobody would like be comfortable with it. So these pickup boxes or locations are much more preferred.
And it works, it's like similar to, it sounds like it's similar to the Amazon lockers that we use here.
Yeah, correct. But here is not like one Amazon, there's like 5 to 10 different companies doing that. And I think in the future there will be some consolidation where this will be like norm. And some companies are even they are seeing some type of potential like future where this will be part of the state infrastructure. And there'll be one box next to each home where these things will be like connected with. But it's like 5 to 10 years away from us.
I think you just invented mailboxes.
Basically, you know, it's basically mailboxes. But you can have there everything. You can get your prescription drugs. You can have there like your, I don't know, furniture. You can even there your groceries delivered there.
That would be, you know, I've been doing our local grocer offers delivery, and it's like $75 a year. It's so cheap. I love it. Going to the grocery store is like a weird delight now, because I do it, you know, once every 6 weeks, and then the rest of they just show up at my front door. It's the coolest.
Yeah.
So
it's awesome.
Totally off track there. So talk to me about advertising and marketing, right? I would suspect that it's the same channels, you know, it's social and Google, right? Are there like secret European only channels that I don't get to use?
Actually, now that you say that, Kind of, there is some like secret sauce in Europe, you know, some specific local national channels that you should take a look into. Because, of course, you have the social that everything you do in America sooner or later comes to Europe. Here, influencer marketing is still like very much in trend, I would say. Even if it's getting more and more expensive, it's still like very like realistic. But then you have this type of local Amazons, you know? You have these local services that work as marketplaces and where you can put your products in using a feed or something similar or connecting directly with your Shopify store. And you can actually bid on these marketplaces for your products to like rank higher. So instead of just having Amazon, Facebook, Google, etc., you actually have like 2, 3, 4 different potential marketplaces where you can list your products and increase your visibility much faster. If you are in Poland, of course, there is Allegro. If you are in Czech Republic, you have Eureka, you have Zboží. You don't know what this is, so it doesn't matter. But like in Hungary, they have their own as well. Like there is a bunch of countries that have their own like preferred places to buy on or to compare prices. Hmm. And you should definitely do your research, like what is the place where people will compare prices and list the products there, especially if you don't have like a super unique product that you will not find elsewhere.
So run me through the regulations on that advertising. Like in the US, there are some regulations, like on organic, I got to market sponsored content, SponCon, but yeah, not a ton of stuff. Tell me about regulations on advertising. Stricter, lax, different?
There is much more specific regulation, specifically speaking about GDPR. The laws here in Europe are more, how can I say, more well detailed on how things should work. So you have to pay more attention to it, comparing with like federal laws or even state laws in the US regarding privacy and so on. I think that's, for example, one of the reasons why Shopify collapse, it will take a long time to get here in Europe, you know? The fact that you would be like sharing data across multiple like stores and companies, it's kind of messy, you know? There are laws regarding privacy that make things harder to do and makes features and tools come here later. I don't think that it's just like because Shopify is so focused on the US that things stay there for a long time. It's about the fact that things take a long time to be able to be adapted and prepared for the EU regulations. The same thing happened, for example, with Threads by Meta. It took like 6 months extra after they launched in the States to actually get to Europe. And that's all due to these like regulations. TikTok Shop, similar thing, start first in the US, not just because it's a bigger market, because it's easier to start there, then slowly they start going into other countries.
Did you know that most Shopify stores are leaving 10 to 20% of their revenue on the table with every single purchase? Each year, Shopify merchants make New Year's resolutions to increase profits, but they overlook one crucial aspect, maximizing every order with upsells. That's like breaking your promise on day one, but you could turn that resolution into reality with Zipify One-Click Upsell. One-Click Upsell is this secret weapon Shopify merchants are using to unlock extra revenue on every single sale. I've seen this app transform stores, doubling their revenue. In fact, One-Click Upsell has already helped merchants like you make $500 million in extra upsell revenue for your stores. Zipify OCU is the original Shopify upsell app, and it's been boosting AOV, that's average order value, since 2016, thanks to its seamless integration and intuitive upsell funnels. With the most upsell placements, AI-driven copy suggestions, and mobile-friendly designs, it's no surprise that the average OCU user increases revenue 10 to 15% as soon as they set up the app. The new year brings new opportunities, my friend. So start your 2024 strong with the app that makes your revenue goals a reality. Zipify One-Click Upsell. Go to zipify.com/Kurt and start your 30-day free trial today. That's zipify.com/KURT to try Zipify One-Click Upsell for free. Don't just make resolutions, make profits. Add Zipify One-Click Upsell today and kick off the new year with a lot more sales. Oh, hey, so have you started playing with TikTok Shop?
Not yet, because it's not like really available here yet. Now, that's exactly the point, you know, like you don't have much, you don't have like all the tools that you like to have. You don't have them at first glance. At the same time, it's good because you can see how it works out in different countries before in the States, and then you can just put it here in place when you see it's work or it works or not when it arrives here. One thing that is very clear, and that's like regarding GDPR once again, you should take it very seriously because they not like the fines here can be pretty high. You know, every year there is some new law on how your cookies bar should look like, what options should be there or not, how easy it should be to handle consent or not consent, etc. You know, we have a quick story about GDPR here in Czech, in Europe. I had a client from Canada, actually, living in Austria, and she was launching a new business, and she said, okay, I have a bunch of contacts from previous business deals in the past. Some guy I met in an event like 8 years ago. Let me just like mass email my new store, my new project. Like these people, like I helped them in the past. I think they'll be happy for me. Like 1 week later, she got served in the mail because of breaking GDPR laws.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Ugh. Worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, here it's just like a free-for-all in my inbox.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about email. So for email service providers, what's the go-to? What's the default? Is it still Klaviyo?
Actually, Klaviyo, in some countries, yes. Is Klaviyo still super strong? In some countries, Klaviyo never got super popular because there are, of course, the MailChimps of the world, and there is similar as Shopify. Klaviyo grows in these markets due to partners like us, not because they are focusing here or marketing here. So the growth is very slow. And then there is a bunch of like really good local solutions that do the job pretty well. And they are localized to the needs of the country. You know, that's something that Klaviyo would never be able to do it by themselves. If I want to give you an example, just speak about one language. There are languages here that basically conjugate the words depending on their grammar syntax. So if I say, hey, Kurt, I cannot say the word Kurt just like it is. I have to say Kurt, you know? So if I say, hi, Kurt, in an email, I actually need to have some API to conjugate this word so it doesn't look weird when I address you by your first name. So this is something that Klaviyo wouldn't ever do, they would never think about doing. So of course, for example, my agency for this specific problem, we did an app that allows for this specific language to do this translation. And we basically put it in some Klaviyo like meta field or whatever to make sure like people can use it on their templates, you know. But these are specific things that is very hard to solve at scale for a big company like Klaviyo. So the very generic solutions like MailChimp, everybody knows, get successful. And at the same time, local solutions for each country end up being like very popular as well. But I think Klaviyo just doesn't succeed here as much because of lack of knowledge about the platform and because its price point is quite high in comparison with other tools.
Perception and adoption of Klaviyo, very different depending on region. Mm-hmm. What is the perception of Shopify in Europe?
First of all, like maybe the summary of this whole conversation is that Europe is not really a place. Europe is like a group of places. So it would be even hard to say what is the feeling about Shopify in Europe in general. Of course, I can say they have a market share of 10 to 20%, but like each country is quite individual in that. You know, UK obviously is the country after US with the most amount of Shopify stores. So hugely popular there. Then you have places that start being very interested in Shopify in Europe, especially France, Germany, and Spain. Shopify is actually investing a lot themselves into that. They have like local people getting hired, promoting, being in local events, etc. So Shopify is becoming a household name in these nations. In other countries, it seems like something very cool that I want to try, but I'm afraid of. So if you don't have the support of the partners in the ecosystem, you actually can like be always defaulting to something that you know, the lesser evil that you already know. So it comes to
the devil, you know, better than the devil, you know.
Exactly. So you need to depend on the local community to catch up to Shopify first, and then the merchants start going into it. That's what happened with the Czech Republic, Slovakia, countries around us, that we as partners come in, start educating, start showing case studies, results that big business can work perfectly in Shopify. So then people start like joining the bandwagon.
Yeah, you need those early wins and then to publicize them. That makes sense. But you also, you need that partner buy-in as well. So you've got experience here. I'm curious to know, what's the biggest challenge that you have faced, you know, working with a large business and moving them to Shopify or Shopify Plus? You know, for us, the migration projects, those are the glorious Shopify projects. Those are the big ones, the fun ones, the tough ones. And so I think, you know, for us, that's where I see the real learnings happen, because you have to solve new problems. For you, what's one of those biggest challenges in doing those migrations to Shopify for clients?
Yeah, I 100% agree that migrations are the most fun. They are like the biggest and most interesting things we can do. From my perspective, I believe that the hardest thing is to change the mindset around software or e-commerce software development. Because you asked me before, what is the feeling about Shopify in Europe? And one of the biggest competitors of Shopify is still maybe the custom solution, either in-house or through some external agency. I guess people want to have full control about everything, and they want to decide how everything should work on the store, each single process, etc. So for us to move like a big company from their custom solution to their in-house solution, we need to basically educate them to don't try to like fit a circle in a square. You know, they have to try to explain that they shouldn't like try to adapt the online store so much to what they think they need, but try to adapt their processes to what Shopify offers. And explain that by doing that, we are actually doing them a favor, because we're going to be able to streamline a lot of things, automate a lot of things, and make the customer journey even more successful. Because Shopify has this know-how of like millions of stores, and they continuously improve their solution based on it, you know? And they are just like one company. Maybe they have, okay, 100 experts. But what is 100 experts compared with like the amount of know-how that Shopify has? Of course, we need to adapt it to our local market, and there may be some challenges with it. But the moment that we can explain to the client to try to natively take advantage of Shopify and then build on top of it, that's like very hard to educate people on that. But it's getting easier and easier as we show them more and more solutions, more and more clients that have taken that step and are saving like hundreds of thousands per year.
So again, you know, it goes back to education and awareness. But to your point, you're right. Shopify gives us all these tools, and we're grateful for the tools they give us. You know, they don't have to do, they can just stop adding features today, right? You know, so I'm always grateful for what they provide us.
Yeah.
And then within those tools, you could do crazy things with them, all kinds of goofy workarounds. But yeah, ultimately, the system works best and life is easiest when you use the tools the way they were intended, and like Shopify describes to you. They're like, this is how we want you to use this. You know, when facing X problem, this is our preferred solution. And then suddenly everything works nicely together. And like, there's reasons you may not be aware of as to why they're like, hey, do it this way, you know, until you end up breaking something later. So easier to try and adapt and adopt, easier to adopt their processes than to try to adapt theirs to yours, I think. All right. Final question. What's one piece of advice you'd give to a Shopify merchant who's trying to succeed or break into the European market? Acknowledging fully that European market is an extremely broad group of folks.
Connect with local experts that know what they are doing in that specific country, not Europe, you know? Go to Germany, speak with German experts, you know? Or local experts know best what people are used to and how to better leverage your product and your operations into that country. Don't underestimate the power of countries where the ad costs are much lower than what you are used to. Like, your marketing budget in the US makes much more here than you can expect. It's like the two big things that come to mind. And don't underestimate logistics and operations. These three things are key for me.
I love that tip. Your marketing dollars go further and go, like, when you're trying to localize your experts, localize your help too.
Yeah.
I think that's excellent advice. David Simoes, where can we go to learn more about you?
You can definitely connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, DM me, ask me anything. Or you can check our website at soundsgood.agency.
I will include I'll include Sounds Good Agency in the show notes. We mentioned Shopify's translation app that we both had good success with. Put that in there, and I'll throw in your other links in here as well, for LinkedIn, etc. Okay, fabulous, David. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot.
Lovely to speak with you, man.